this week on The Inside Flap.
You know, I scare easy. That's for sure. You can ask Allison. We'll watch a scary movie, and without fail, at like 4 a.m., I'll be like, hey, I got to use the bathroom. You want to come with me?
Totally.
And I'm like, or at least just talk while I go. Like yeah. You know, like, I don't want the silent, dark house. How about that? Barry Gordy would tell them, like, hey, the janitors are tapping their toes. Like, we're done. Meaning the drums could be quiet, more louder, blah, blah, blah. But hey, they're dancing. We're done.
Yeah.
And that's what I look for. So I'll be like working on the book. I'm like, oh boy, this is rewrite number 5. This is it. And then finally I'm like, wait a minute. The janitors are tapping their toes. We're done.
I love that. But when it's in front of the entire—
You're dressed down a little bit.
To get called out.
Yeah.
In front of not only my peers, other teachers there, but the entire senior class, as I get the old, Mr. Medicus. Yeah. First of all,
I'm not surprised.
No one calls me Mr. Medicus.
I'm not surprised.
No.
Are you surprised, Andrew?
Not really, but no. I think, unfortunately, this principal has a problem with you.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the table to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. And to my left is Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
Yes, sir. Thank you all for joining us once again for episode 125 of
The Inside Flap,
a book podcast. Got a great show for you today. We're joined by Josh Mallerman. You know Josh, author of Bird Box and the sequel Mallory. We had a great conversation with him. Laura and I did. We'll have that chat for you in just a little bit as well. We will have for you our
book review.
Book recommendations, and of course, the
audio book
of the week. But first, listen, I wanted to share with you guys. Well, first of all, it's kind of weird because recently certain things have been running a little hot for me, like kind of like in patterns. For instance, I got pulled over by the cops on Christmas Eve, and then right after that, I got pulled over 2 more times. Like for 3 times in the span of a month without any pullovers, if that is indeed a term, a pullover, mm-hmm. Can you call it a pullover?
I think so. Yeah.
Without being pulled over for years. And then 3 in like 2 months.
Hmm.
Well, now, recently, it's been a little run-ins with my principal. Now you can go back to episode 122 to hear the bit about how he basically said I was one bad day away from being called a pedophile. Now, the last poo, and yes, you can
go. He didn't call you.
No, but
he definitely didn't mention you.
No, but remember.
In fact, I think he brought you in. No, I think, mm-hmm. I think he brought someone who he didn't think was to ask if there were any.
Well, all I know is he said to me right after the swimming event that mm-hmm. we had, Dave, you know, all it would take is for one kid to say, well, I didn't like the way Dave stared at me.
Oh.
That's exactly what he said, if you recall from episode 122. That is exactly what he said to me. And if that's not basically saying I'm one step away from being called a pedophile, then I don't know what is.
Mm.
True?
Yeah, I guess
so.
Well, I mean,
kind of.
So, you know, there's a pedophile, and then there's
okay,
there's a pervert.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, there all you right? go, pervert.
Yeah, okay. Let's not.
Right. You're right. Thank you. Let's be careful when
let's not over dramatize this.
Yeah, okay. It is right. A little over dramatized here.
Good point. Yeah. Good point. Pervert. I guess he's saying the possibility exists, but the possibility exists anywhere. The point is,
I feel like if someone is just now listening to the show, I really urge you to go back and listen to this episode.
Because
you are painting yourself in a terrible light.
And listen to episode. The point is, listen, I'm not a pervert. I've never been a pervert. I've never even played one on TV. But You can go back in here.
So what's the second thing? Now Andrew and I are like, what's going on?
So a few more run-ins with him yesterday and today. Today we had a graduation rehearsal. Oh, yeah. So everybody's out on the football field and we're getting ready for the big day on Thursday. Going to have an outdoor graduation. Cold, first of all, freezing
cold
out there. I had my hoodie and shorts on as I was shivering. But the interesting thing is, because all the seniors had to be there live and in person, is that we got to see some kids that we have not seen in person for a year.
Wow.
And then some of the kids I never, like, there's one kid, so there's a girl I was talking to that I had not seen all year ever live in person. Hmm. However, we had, she's been in my class, one of my favorite students, always talked a lot in class, a great contributor to class. So I was talking with her and we were doing a little, as I want to do, a little shtick. So we're doing a little shtick back and forth, a little, and we're getting a little louder and a little animated. And then all of a sudden I hear, Mr. Medicus, come over the loudspeakers. And I whipped my head around, and sure enough, there's our esteemed principal standing in front of all the seniors, shooting icy stone cold daggers my way, as I guess he was trying to explain to the seniors where to line up or where to go.
Or the need to be quiet.
Or maybe the need to be quiet. And I'm over there doing shtick with the student. And I gave the old I gave it a couple of claps and I was like, here we go. Thinking maybe he would laugh and smile and say, let's get on with it.
No.
No such luck. No such luck. He just looked away and continued on with his. So that was
a little disconcerting.
A little disconcerting confrontation there. Not quite a constant. But when it's in front of the entire.
You're dressed down a little bit.
To get called out.
Yeah.
In front of not only my peers, other teachers there, but the entire senior class, as I get the old, Mr. Medicus. First of all,
I'm not surprised.
No one calls me Mr. Medicus.
I'm not surprised.
No.
Are you surprised, Andrew?
Not really, but no. I think, unfortunately, this principal has a problem with you. and I honestly think you need to go and have a talk with him.
No.
I honestly think you
something does seem to be brewing.
You need to confront
it. It's brewing.
And this is
like a pot of coffee.
And is this something which is, because of COVID, this guy's been locked into a room for a year, and he has forgotten how to, right, interpret like real life. But I think you honestly need to go and have a discussion with this guy.
Well, that won't happen. But yesterday I was out, I avoid confrontation at all costs. So I'm not going to go talk to him. And we've had plenty of side conversations, and he's given me plenty of attaboys. I made a video. I sent out a nice email to the entire staff telling them how awesome this video was that I made just the other day. But then yesterday I was out for a run during my off period. Which, by the way, this is a kind of something that irked me that happened a couple of years ago. As a teacher, we get two off periods. We get a lunch break and you get two off periods. One of them, you're supposed to be doing grading, working, preparing for class, meetings, something like that. Your other off period is your free period, and you're allowed to do whatever you want. Some teachers go to Starbucks, they go to Target, they go for walks.
Run an errand or
whatever,
something.
Run an errand, whatever. I've been known to go for a run. I do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I was doing this yesterday, and I'll get to that in a second, but I remembered, I flashed back to a few years ago when we were in a big meeting where one of the other teachers, and we were talking about planning for the next year, and one of them said,
it was a different principal though.
This was a different principal, yes, but this was a teacher who said this.
Okay.
Who said, we're not going to have this, teachers can go out running whenever they want. Now, there's only one guy who's known for going out and going for runs. So he's clearly called me out in front of, but I didn't say anything. Nobody said anything about it.
Yeah.
It went away. I continued to do my runs. That was kind of weird. And I never confronted that guy. And that guy still is at the school. And I've had pleasant conversations. In fact, we worked together on a project this year. So I'm not exactly sure what that was all about.
His name doesn't start with a Q, does it?
No.
Okay.
No. Definitely not. Quinn?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Just Quinn's double checking. No. I thought he was too. And then I thought, well, maybe he's not.
No, Quinn's the best.
Okay.
But I continue to go for my runs, which I was doing yesterday. And what I like to do is so I get 45 minutes. I get right out there, I throw on my shorts, and I'm wearing shorts. So the shorts come off, the running shorts go on, and I'm out the door just like that. And I give myself 2 to 3 minutes before the bell rings on my way back in. So I can rush in the door. I go to the door closest to my room. And let's not forget, now I am in the big band room. That's right, the big band room this year. As they took me out of the auditorium and put me in the band room. What theater teacher doesn't want to
I
be
see
in
this band room band all the time on author calls with
oh,
you.
Oh, yeah, you do, yeah.
It's a nice room.
Oh,
and
it's a great room.
Shout out to Gretchen because her piano is right behind you.
Yes, shout out to listener Gretchen, a P1 listener, number mm-hmm. one listener, who donated, was kind enough to donate a beautiful piano to our mm-hmm. school that Ixarius hops on every single morning. Hops on that piano and plays all during advisement, and it's just wonderful. So shout out to Gretchen for doing that. But anyway, so I'm in the big band room, and so that's what I do. So I give myself 2 to 3 minutes to get back in. Now yesterday, I go for my run, had a great run. I run up to the door, and there's an access panel, and you kind of hit your, you know, we all have little key cards. Mm-hmm. So I swipe my key card on the access panel and go to grab the door, and it's, the door doesn't budge.
Hmm.
I'm like, oh, that's weird. Let me try this again. Go ahead, swipe it again and again, and I'll swipe it 5 more times, and it's constantly getting the buzzer. Now, I don't know about you guys, but this is where my mind goes. Anytime something like this happens, if my key card doesn't work, if I can't log into my email, I always assume that I've been fired and everything's been revoked. I don't know if you guys feel the same way about that, but that's
I'd have to fire myself.
That's how I do.
So
that's true.
Yeah.
Andrew?
Yeah, I think sometimes I'm thinking, well, they've locked me out. I've got no access to this website.
I can see that. If I worked in a firm, I'd be like, well, then that's done.
My mind always goes there.
And then I realize it's just an IT error, and I'm like, damn it, I still got a job.
Yeah, that's the other, the second thought is like, yeah,
so
bad.
So it's not working, and I you know, kind of cut my hands around the window. There's a little glare hitting the window, and I see one of my students walking in the hallway. I start banging on the glass, and she comes scurrying over, one of my favorite kids, actually, this girl named Khadija. And Khadija's like, we're in a lockout.
Oh, no. You
yeah,
got locked
we're in
out.
A lockout, which means, and a lockout is no one is allowed to leave the building or enter the building. All doors are to remain locked.
Oh my goodness.
And she says to me, she's like, well, I see you there. Should I let you in?
Yeah, because you're a figure of authority.
Clearly, I'm a teacher. I'm like, no, let's not. Listen, I don't know. Security, they've taken everything super seriously now.
You don't want to get taken down.
I don't want them. Everything's time stamped. There's a camera. There's the door. They can see the exact time a door gets open. So I'm like, listen, don't worry about it. I'll go over to the main entrance and contact the secretary, the secretary, the school secretary, administrative Ruby.
You contact the front office.
So yes, well, Ruby and I, we have a little. We both have Apple Watches, and we use anytime she needs. And I cover classes a lot.
Oh,
and she's
right.
in charge of getting people to cover classes. So we always use the old walkie talkie feature on the Apple Watch. So it's a lot of fun. It's like kind of like super secret.
Yeah,
so
I like
I'm
that.
Going around the building. I'm talking into my watch. I hit the little walkie talkie feature. I'm like, Ruby, come in, Ruby. And she's like, what do you want, Medicus? And I'm like, Ruby, I'm locked out. And she's like, I know, it's a lockout. I said, let me in. She's like, I don't know if I can. I'm like, well, what the hell do I do? I got class, you know, literally.
Yeah.
I got students waiting for me to open up. She's like, let me talk to the principal. Let me talk to...
Oh, no.
I'm not going to say his name.
Sure.
Let me talk to so-and-so, and we'll see what we can do. And
I'm no.
Okay, great.
And you're in your running shorts.
Listen. Now, you know how humid it's been here recently.
Oh, no.
Not only... And I have certain running shorts that are shorter than others. I've got my shorty short ones that you can almost see some things that you shouldn't be able to see. And I'm just dripping at this point.
Gross.
Dripping down sweat. Entirely drenched. Like I've just stepped out of a lovely shower, except I don't look lovely. I look terrible, I'm assuming. I'm standing by the front door.
This is before the haircut, too, probably.
And this is before the haircut, yeah. And I'm just waiting. Time's going by and going. And there are there's like five cop cars out by the front there. And I have no idea what's going on.
So maybe it's a real lockdown. You don't know that. What if it was, Dave?
I
absolutely
have no idea what it was. Well, it turns out it was.
Oh,
and it turns out it was because one of the kids at the other schools that's housed on our campus was upset because they couldn't graduate. So he was making threats and they locked down the school so he couldn't get up. Meanwhile, it's just me. I'm a teacher.
Sure.
You know, let's use a little common sense here. Let's let the teacher in. Anyway, like 5 minutes go by. Finally, the principal comes up to the front door. He opens it up and, you know, I'm standing there drenched and the class is already 3 or 4 minutes in. So I just want to get to class. So
Were you sick to your stomach? I'd be sick to my stomach. I was so nervous.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I just scurry past him and I hear I give him a wave. I said, I'm like, thank you, thank you. He's like, yep. And I hear him he's got his walkie-talkie because they all got walkie-talkies. Not on the Apple Watch, though, but the old handheld walkie-talkie. And I hear him go, oh, yeah, Medicus is in the building. He was out for a run. Okay, thanks is all I heard. And then I come to find out that it was like going back and forth between administrators and secure. Should we let him in? Can we let him in?
You were kidding.
Can we let him in? Should we let him in? We need to let him. He's a teacher. He's a teacher.
So he has nothing to do with the thing.
Was a whole thing. People.
That's so embarrassing.
I didn't even know who had walkie-talkies.
Talking about you and your running habits.
And they were coming up to me like, Medicus, what were you doing out there? Like, I just went for a run.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you see any cops or just the cop cars?
Just the cop cars.
You're lucky you didn't get like rifles trained on you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Running around, what's he doing?
If it was a movie or a TV show, that's what would have happened.
The wrong guy. Mm-hmm. You got the wrong guy.
Of course, you know, where would he have been hiding anything?
That's true.
You know what I mean? Well, he's obviously unarmed.
He's obviously unarmed.
He was clearly unarmed.
Someone sprayed him with some kind of biochemical weapon.
But anyway, so that's what's been going on with my principal. Yeah, and like I said, we are on good terms, but recently some little things, little incidents popping up. Something to keep an eye on as we have
sure
10 days left in the school
year. Get some face-to-face, some pleasantries, some good eye contact. That's what I would do.
That's usually what I do. And I'll walk down because he has...
It goes a long way just to talk to somebody.
And I'll just make an excuse to go down to the office so I can walk by him and be like, hey, how we doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, we'll keep an eye on that situation. Laura, how has your week been?
Not as exciting as yours, Dave.
No, it never.
However, last week we had fireballs at 1:45 from and like what sounded like bombs going off in our backyard.
Yes, we did.
You'll have to listen to that episode. This week we were awoken at 3 a.m. Andrew, by a horrific noise echoing through our small little suburban neighborhood.
Let's play a little guessing
game.
Let's
play the noise.
This is exactly... Look, he's looking over here at the iPad trying to figure... Don't read.
Would you come on? We're going to...
He can't see me.
And speak into the microphone while we're at it. Now, I'm going to play the sound effect for you. And we'll get
3 in the morning, Andrew.
This is what we heard. 3 in the morning. Well, first we heard the dogs barking.
Yeah.
We both leapt out of bed. Well, I leapt out of bed first and then heard this.
It honestly sounded worse than that.
Yeah, multiply that times two.
Because it was echoing off the homes.
Oh, that's right. Echoing off the homes on the block.
Right. Andrew? So we guess?
Yeah.
Yes, let's see. What do you got?
I'm going to go with bobcats.
Well, you know, that's what Laura said.
I thought it was, too.
Laura said. I thought it was a cat, maybe a cat in heat.
Dave's first thing said, oh, it sounds like an animal in pain.
Mm-hmm.
It was loud.
Laura, you found this on YouTube just by searching.
Just by listening to sounds.
Listening to sounds. And it turns out this is a fox.
A female fox.
A female fox screaming. What is known as a vixen.
A vixen.
A vixen.
Yeah.
I thought it might have been like a cat in pain.
And it's just simply making the noise.
Yeah. We saw a video of another fox. That's just what they're just making a noise.
Yeah. Horrific. Yeah. It's horrific.
Is that a mating noise? Did you?
My guess is it would be a mating noise.
Who wouldn't be attracted to?
Well, the thing is, too, like on the one hand, it's nice.
Yeah.
The foxes are back.
Right.
Because we lost them all to mange for a while, and they started coming back in.
Oh, that's true.
I've never heard that noise before, though, and we used to have a ton of foxes.
Yeah. I saw a coyote on my run today over there by Greenwood Village.
Mm-hmm. Did you really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, and then the other thing, of course, once that happens at like 3 to 3:30, you can't get back to sleep again. Or if you're me, you can't. So that was rough.
I went right back to sleep.
Did you really?
I saw on logs, yeah.
Oh, I did not. It was the worst. Mm. Could not. Mm. But today I took Sylvia to get her driver's permit.
Yes, you did. Well, she had to pass the test. You took her to take the test.
The
written test.
Andrew came in and said, oh, nice mugshot. It really, right, Andrew?
It does.
Yeah. It looks like a mugshot.
Like, there's no joy. There's no happiness in that photo.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Well, did they tell her not to smile, that she couldn't smile?
I have no idea because I was not allowed in. So I was allowed in for certain things. So they're very strict. They did not get the CDC guidelines that
we're
letting a certain number of people in at the time. You wait outside. It's very strict. But she goes in. We get her test taken. And the first time she takes the test, that's right, the first time.
You had to say it the first time.
Yeah.
I can only assume
she has
was
to sit
time.
Next to a young man who was covered with tattoos, facial tattoos, like the Illustrated Man
Tyson.
I don't know what Mike Tyson looks like right now. This was a white guy. This was a white guy, and his face was covered. It was like something that you would see, like the what is it? MI-13 or
like a traveling,
like a gang,
a sideshow. Oh, like a gang,
more like a gang, just covered with facial tattoos.
Yeah, it'd be kind of hard to concentrate when that's right next to you.
And not only that, so that was his distinguishing feature. And he's also very young. Like I had never seen anyone outside of movies with that many tattoos on his face.
Wow.
Or TV shows, and Sylvia said she hadn't either. He was touching himself under his pants.
What?
Uh-huh. And then he was singing, speaking all of the questions on the test. So whatever test he was taking, he was singing them to himself and touching himself.
Was he singing the song, I Touch Myself?
No.
That is a song.
No. Mm. So she did not pass that test.
No, I don't see how anybody could pass that test.
And they said, like, cheerfully, like, yeah, you want to try again? And she's like, she brightened up and she's like, yeah, I'll pass this time. I'll pass this time.
I promise you I'll pass.
Yeah. So this time they put her on the other side of the kiosk because Tattoo was still there.
Oh,
stroking
still singing.
Himself
oh,
and,
my God.
And singing and taking the test. Yeah.
Oh.
You're laughing, but it's real at this DMV. So she goes to the other side and there's another young man sitting where he had told her computer was. And I see Sylvia interacting with this kid and it was a long, confusing conversation where he asked her if she was Hayden, the name Hayden.
Mm-hmm.
And she said no, but she was standing right next to him. And he said, oh, okay. And he said, you're sure you're not Hayden? She says, no, I'm not. And meanwhile, she said she looked and his screen says Sylvia Medicus, like he's getting ready to take her test. And so she points at his computer and she said, I'm Sylvia Medicus. And he said, oh, okay.
Well, who?
That's nice.
Who's Hayden?
What? I don't know. None of us know. Also, this kid was the only one in the place without a mask.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Mm. And so she points to the screen. She says, I'm Sylvia Medicus, thinking he'll get a clue like, hey, you know, my name's right on your computer, buddy.
Right. Uh-huh.
And he just looks at her like, okay. Like, okay. She's like, no, you're at my computer. So then he moves. So then she passes the test, which is great. But we're in there. And like, I wasn't allowed. I had to go out for different things so they could let other people in. Because they have strict numbers and it was ma'am, you need to leave. You need to leave so I can let more people in.
But they let the kid in with no mask.
He was able to go in without a mask. They didn't say anything to him. Yeah.
So here's the question I have is, I mean, your daughter is a minor,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
And so when it comes down to is, you know, oh, I can't go in, but your daughter is a minor.
I know.
Right?
Yes. She's 15. She just turned 15.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you should be allowed to accompany your kid
right?
into the building.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I was in there for part of it where I had to pay, Andrew. And
oh, then, they'll let you
oh,
in.
Then
for
they'll
that.
Let you
sure.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
Then, and then sign her up and verify, you know, that she is who she says she is. Huh. But it was a very stressful place. As like not shockingly, there were people shouting because they're behind plexiglass and they have masks and all the sound ricochets. There's no padding. There's no separate booths. So you can hear everything. And there was some poor guy, older man, and they're shouting at him about what he needed to do to renew his motorcycle license.
Which location were you at?
Centennial.
Okay. And mm-hmm. what's that street that's
University on? University in Arapahoe.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know that one specifically, but...
not a good one.
Yeah.
You'd think it might not be that one. Bad. It's a richer neighborhood, but no. Mm. No.
Yeah, I know. I normally go to the one in downtown Littleton, or there's another
one. I've been to that one.
There's another one in Centennial that opens super early in the morning.
This is a permit. This is a place that you could do your permits, which is why we went there.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I've never had a problem. I mean, not really a problem with the other two locations.
No, the one in downtown Littleton's great. I've been there multiple times for different reasons. But this one was just awful. And then for some reason, this woman who was helping us just threw it out there. Oh, you don't want to work here. Oh, honey, you don't want to work
what?
Here. To Sylvia. It was something because
Was Sylvia asking for a job?
No, but she accidentally signed her name under like a service technician's name or whatever,
right,
where the woman was. And Sylvia's like, you know, I signed where maybe I work here.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, you don't want to work here. You don't want to work here. And we could just barely hear her over the shouting going on as they're trying to explain to this guy. Like if I was older or if I was someone who was hearing impaired, I wouldn't know what was going on. It was that loud.
Wow.
It was awful. And then the weirdos taking these permit tests. Weirdos. My kid included, I guess.
I don't know why they bother taking the test. All I know...
Oh, you want to take it again?
Man.
She's like, yeah, I do.
Half of my students drive in. More than half of my students, they just drive.
Yeah, a lot of
Sylvia don't take
and his
any
friends
tests,
who do.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially people
who are out
like,
there driving.
They are out there driving. Yeah.
And they're driving at 13, 14 years old.
And they're driving their younger siblings at 13, 14 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. Andrew, how have you been?
It's been a busy week.
Yeah.
And for me, and so... You know, I had a fly to the East Coast, and I had five or six different things I had to do. I'm making that trip. I hadn't traveled there in a while. So you make the most of it. And so I had a 6:10 flight. So, of course, I get up at 3:30 in the morning.
Mm. With the foxes, the vixens.
Yeah. And it was Wednesday. It was Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get to the airport and all that. Now, I can tell you that the airport's now... even at 5 in the morning, it was already a zoo.
Oh.
And so now that travel is resuming,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is as bad as before COVID, maybe worse, because, you know, TSA doesn't know. They're retraining all new people.
Oh, yeah, they probably are.
The passengers have kind of forgotten things. There's sort of like the mix of this COVID and non-COVID stuff and, you know, things like that. But I can tell you that the airports are busy now. If you're going to travel, allow yourself extra time. It is a mess, right? It is a real zoo at the airport. Now, the best part of that experience was, you know, I have to rent a car. And so I show up. I have got the rental car. Reservation is at 12:30. My flight actually got in a little bit early.
And you flew into BWI, Baltimore?
Baltimore.
All right.
And so I go to the rental car counter, you know, and for once, there's a shuttle right there. I get right there. I'm like, man, I'm going to be in and out of here in no time, right? I'm doing the O.J. Simpson.
Never happened with rental cars.
Yeah. So,
be careful when you say you're doing the O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, I'm doing the O.J. Simpson. Yeah.
You're referencing the old rental car commercial.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know what he was referencing.
I had no idea. Hertz rental car. They used to have O.J. Simpson sprinting through the airport.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
you can't do it.
I had no idea. I really didn't know. So, I thought it was
old school.
Okay.
I'm going old school.
Well, when you say you're doing the O.J. Simpson, I mean,
not the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, the rental car.
You're not grabbing your girlfriend and hacking her head off.
Oh, so I get there.
Oh, too soon.
Yeah.
I get there and...
so much blood! Oh,
sorry.
Yeah, there was no blood in this experience. Okay. So, and there's like eight people in line in front of me. You know, and why is it you've got all these rental car companies? You got like 10 different companies, but people are only waiting in line at one company. So, anyways,
you see that over and over again. I don't know why.
So I get in, I get there, and it's like, you know, I'm waiting in line for 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. Right, I got there at 11:30, waiting in line for 40 minutes, and so, you know, I get there, and she's like, well, you know, you're here before the 12:30, right? Now, as far as renting a car, I've never had it where somebody says, well, your rental reservation says 12:30, so we're not even going to talk to you.
No, it's kind of a loose, nebulous time. Yeah. It's everybody knows. Yeah.
So basically, she's like, you know, I'll do you a favor and I'll process your reservation, even though you're 10.
What, are they waiting for 10 minutes before a car gets so there that's your car?
So then,
this makes any sense.
Yeah. So then,
that's a red flag.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then she's like, I fill out all the paperwork, everything's good to go. And she's like, now you're going to have to wait 45 minutes for your vehicle. Right?
Oh, that was her way of breaking bad news to you by making you think it was your fault.
Well, whatever, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then finally, I'm waiting around, I'm reading a book, right? Finally, she's like, Mr. Dowd, it's like, okay, your car's in space, you know, 323.
She didn't say,
Andrew Dowd.
You didn't hear your jingle come over the loudspeaker?
No. That's
too bad.
Yeah. And so
we need to get that out to rental car
companies. So I get out there, you know, and you got to walk like a mile to get to the place where the car is. And so I get there and I'm within 10 feet of the car. I'm thinking, there it is. Oh, she's a beauty. And sure enough, then somebody's in the car and they drive off.
Oh, my goodness.
What? They drive off from the car.
No way.
Yeah.
It's just like that. Yeah.
And so I got to walk all the way back inside and I look around and there's no attendants. There's no people I can talk to out the garage. I got to walk all the way back in.
And Dave, like, Medicus would have been so angry. Oh,
yeah. And I'm trying to like get their attention.
Yeah.
Right. And it probably takes at least 15 minutes round trip to walk out and back in.
With all your luggage too.
Yeah. And so, and then I'm like, somebody drove off in the car. And she says, well, what do you mean? And so it took me forever to
what do you mean?
To explain,
I mean,
the
there's
situation.
This car, see? Yeah. There was a guy at the wheel and then this happened. Yeah.
So they assigned me another vehicle. And I go back out there, and I'm half expecting it's not going to be
there.
Yeah,
it would happen. Yeah. Right?
But, you know, everything worked out fine in terms of that. But, you know, basically, I spent 2 hours, right?
Man.
I mean,
you want to give this rental car company a shout out?
I'm not going to give it.
You might have mentioned it was Hertz.
No, that was the OJ.
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, I could fly halfway across the country in 2 hours.
I don't think they're going to be sponsoring the show anymore.
Write it down for us.
Yeah.
You can tell us what it rhymes with.
It rhymes with holler.
Okay. All right. Right? Okay.
Yeah. We'll just call it holler.
Sure.
Holler rent a car.
Yep.
And,
okay.
You know, and they did send me a survey, and I
oh, you filled it out.
Yeah, I filled
they,
it.
They
I
made
yeah.
the mistake of
Good
sending
you
a
yeah,
survey.
I filled that baby out. And, you know, and everything was fine in the car and everything like that, but, you know, I don't expect to waste 2.5 hours.
No.
You know,
you also had a thing to go to. It's
well,
not like
and I
you
was
didn't
meeting,
have...
I was meeting somebody for lunch, and I should easily have met that person, but it ended up being, you know, 11:30 by the time, you know, so it took me 3 hours by the time the plane landed until I could actually meet somebody 20 minutes away, as far as it goes. But, you know, I mean...
Where'd you meet for lunch?
Oh, we went to a barbecue place, Mission Barbecue.
Mm. Oh, in Towson. That's the place that, Dave took you there?
Owings Mills, actually.
Yeah, so
that's
he took
you
the
you
one,
went.
That's the one where he drove me to the location of Towson. That's the one where we spent 5 hours in the car getting ready for that party he threw.
Oh, that's so
that
funny.
That craps tournament, Mission Barbecue.
That's but funny.
He loves himself some Mission Barbecue.
Huh. Now, so I spent time with my family in Maryland, and all I can say is... you know, family can't live with them. Pass the beer nuts. Mm-hmm. You know, it's family. I mean, what can you do? So we got together. We spent some time together. You know, it was good. I mean, after you know, COVID, we hadn't really seen each other in a while. So it was good. It was good to get together with family, and especially with some things that are going on in the family. We think about that now. I should give you a little bit of a teaser in case this comes up in the past.
Oh. Okay.
So apparently,
in case it comes up in the past, make a note of that.
I have an uncle. His name is Uncle Joey.
Okay.
Oh, Joey! Yay!
Now, Uncle Joey is, and this is the Italian part of the family.
Oh, it is the Italian.
Yeah, and Uncle Joey's about as Italian as it gets. Hmm. I mean, like, I didn't know they could have, like, green marble dashboards and pickup trucks. Oh. But he still has, like, a green marble dashboard in his pickup truck.
That's so anyways, a spicy meatball.
Yeah. So anyways, apparently, you find out that Uncle Joey had been cheating on his wife back in the 70s with his wife's sister.
Ooh.
Oh, Joey.
And so
with his wife's sister.
Now, oh, no.
So apparently he has a daughter now who's basically surfaced.
Oh, Joey.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Right? Now,
does the daughter look a lot like
Uncle Joey? Well, you know, I'm just hearing about this for the first time. So Uncle Joey is, you know, I mean, honestly, you don't trust this guy for anything.
No.
Right? I mean, seriously, if you shake your hand, you make sure your fingers are still attached when you get it back. And I'm not joking. You meet Uncle Joey in a public place.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying?
I gotcha.
Hey, Andrew, want to come back to the house? No. No, I don't. No.
No.
So, I don't think I've ever met this Uncle Joey.
So apparently, this girl pops up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's trying to connect with the family and things that. And so...
wondering where she came from.
Yeah, and so everybody's starting to figure things out, right? They're starting to figure everything out. And so she tells a story about how when she was a little girl, she saw her Uncle Joey burying a body in
what?
The woods.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I don't know anything else. I don't know where this is going to I don't know where this is going to end up, but you know, just you know, going
I did
back,
not expect that.
No. Yeah,
spending time with the family, you know?
Nice little family get together.
This girl is Uncle Joey's daughter, we think?
We don't know.
It's his daughter. Like, everybody accepts it. She did a DNA test.
Oh.
And so she is his daughter.
Who's the mother?
It's basically his
sister's
sister-in-law.
Sister. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And she saw him burying a body?
That's you know, now, is you know, is this just the imagination?
Right.
Of a young girl, but nobody would put it past Uncle Joey.
But it's not a surprise, see, to you guys, because that's when they always say, you know, there are some times when people are like, oh, it's so-and-so, and when the family's like, yeah.
Yeah, we always thought it might
always thought there, something
it's
was
either,
wrong.
It's either, yeah, he, oh, what a shock, he was such a quiet one, or it's, we thought this day would eventually come.
and apparently there was a family friend that went missing.
Oh my goodness.
And so people are starting to like put the pieces together. And like I said, I don't know where this is going to go.
How old is Uncle Joey now?
He's probably 70, 80 years old. I mean, he's old. Mm. He's probably close to 80.
Huh.
If he's breathing, it's not by much.
Huh. Oh, Uncle Joey. Uncle Joey, what did you do?
Is he like mixed up with you know.
Well, like I said, I wouldn't put anything past him. Past the guy. So, yes, if you guys want to come and hang out with my family the next time I come home, let me know.
I think we'll pass on that.
The only question I have for you, and I texted you this and you never responded, is I know you met up with your brother Anthony was there. Now,
Andrew's twin.
Yes, Andrew's twin brother, fraternal twin.
Mm-hmm.
Last I saw on Facebook is he had a mustache that made him look like a porn star from the 70s. And I texted you. I said, tell your brother to shave that. For God's sake, shave that caterpillar off his face. Does he still have this mustache?
Oh, he's still got it. And it is bad.
It is hideous.
It is definitely bad.
What is he thinking?
Well, I'm thinking, he's completely bald. And
I'm
wondering if he's thinking, this is about the only hair I can grow anymore.
He's bald as a cue ball. I mean, he's bald.
Yeah.
He got a big bald head, and he's got this porn stash going.
Ooh.
And no beard, just this.
No beard, just the mustache.
70s porn stash. Yeah. It's bad.
That's disturbing.
Yeah.
That's disturbing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Huh. All right. I'll tell you what else is just disturbing is Josh Malerman's latest book, Goblin. How's that for a transition for you?
Yeah, like I didn't know where you're going. Good,
no.
though. Good.
His book out right now is Goblin. This is a novel and 6 novellas that all take place in the creepy town of Goblin. And if you are, and what a great name for a town, and we did talk to him about where that name came from. And if you are a fan of spooky, offbeat, and delightfully weird tales, you know, stories that send a shiver down your spine and creep you out, then you'll be sufficiently creeped out by this excellent collection, which Laura and I both really enjoyed. Some of the stories include the one about the guy who's so afraid. I think, Laura, this was your favorite one. The guy who's so afraid.
I liked this one.
Of what could be underneath his bed, or he's afraid of ghosts, that is literally his bed is made of fiberglass, so he could see right through it in case anything's hiding
like
under there.
Like taking walls down and stuff. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The story, my favorite one was about, or one of my favorites, was the carnival magician. This is a guy who can seemingly stop a hatchet being thrown at him in
midair. Oh, that one was hard for me to read.
And that was about a kid in town who was super excited to see this magician. And so he had to sneak out of the house to see the big sideshow and see the magician in town. That was a great story.
That's one of those stories, too, where you're like, I know something really bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
And you can't stop reading.
So, it was that story titled Hatchet Job?
No, it was not. I don't know the title of that one. And this one, I enjoyed this one. The guy who is so in love with a girl, he takes the Vincent Van Gogh ear treatment to the next level, and the next level, and the next level. That was a really good one. These stories are all original and unique, offbeat, and quirkily supernatural.
Quirkily.
Quirkily, that's right. I said it. The novellas are also, what I liked about this is...
quirkily is not a word.
Sometimes...
Is it?
No,
of course not. It should not be a word.
It should be, but it's not. The novellas, they're not super long novellas. They run, there are six of them in here, and they each run about 50 pages each. And to me, it just felt like just the right length, a little more in depth than what you get in a short story. But not as long as some novellas can kind of drag on. These were nice and tight. I love the characters that I met in this strange little town, which... Would you ever visit the town of Goblin?
I would like to, and then I'd like to be let out again.
Right, but you'd have to find someone to let you out. Yeah. Something tells me that when you go into this town...
I'd definitely like to. I want to see the topiaries.
Topiaries. There's topiaries all throughout
the
town.
Experience the rain. Mm-hmm. Watch the strange cops.
Yes, it never... The cops are really weird in this town. Yeah. And it never, ever, ever stops raining. And there's a fun little opening bit that introduces the town and kind of sets the whole thing up in the form of a man delivering a package into the town with strict instructions not to open it or look at it under no circumstances. And you can probably guess what happens. Anyway, the book is Goblin. The author is the great Josh Malerman. Laura and I had a great conversation with him about the book and, of course, Bird Box, among other things. Really enjoyed this conversation. Here it is for you right now.
When we wake up, the world is flat. Could be this, could be that. Could be a gravestone on its side. Could be coins over our eyes.
Repping PBS today. I see a little shilling for PBS.
I actually got two of them. I love this shirt so much. I have two of them. And Allison, my fiance, is probably like, you're wearing that a lot. I'm like, no. I got two of them.
Now, how much do you have to give to get that shirt?
I got it online.
Okay. All right. Okay. Wasn't pledge week then. All right. Okay. Well, listen, thanks for joining us. And where are you at? Are you in in New York?
No, I am like 5 miles outside of Detroit proper.
Oh, wow.
Very good.
So I live in Michigan. I grew up in Michigan. Goblin is in Michigan.
Yeah, it does. Not 8 miles then. So you're nowhere near Eminem. You want to be 5 miles.
8 mile. 8 mile is the border.
Yes.
I'm at 13 mile.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. Well, listen. First, congratulations on yet another Stoker nomination for Mallory. That's awesome.
Yeah. Are you excited and a short story. One Last Transformation. I got to make videos, like acceptance videos for these, which is really unlike me because I'm just like, not to sound so noble, but I can't fake when I'm excited or something. Like sort of be like, thank you very much for this victory. Like, come on, man. Can't we just like live, like pump me in? And he's like, no, we're worried about lag. I'm like, oh my God. Okay.
Oh. Yeah.
So I got to do that tonight. And then it's really embarrassing if you don't win and you've done that, you know, and that video is out there of you accepting the award.
Just don't tear up and then it'll be fine.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be really amazing if I did, and like earnestly did. Like, thank you.
I know. If it just hit you all of a sudden while you're recording, you're like, wow. Yeah. Didn't see it. Yeah.
Is that coming up? When's the virtual ceremony?
I think early May. I'll look it up, but I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, you better get on it. You better write that speech. Let's go. I mean,
people... I think it's due May 1st.
God. Come on, Josh.
Everyone else is already in. The guy wrote me. But then I feel like you can almost start to tell, and I'm not playing some psychological game, but you can almost start to tell because they're like, hey, we really need a video from you. It suggests that maybe you won. And if they kind of go quiet on you, you're like, yeah, they don't need that video anymore.
Play it out. See what happens. Yeah, that's a good tell. That's funny. Well, listen, we loved your collection, Goblin. Also was nominated for a Stoker Award. These six novellas centered on the town of Goblin, a town that might be cursed, might be haunted, whatever it is. It's devilishly entertaining. A town that cries rain. And all the news that's fit to print can be found in the Green Goblin. And what I really love is if you find yourself in the town of Goblin and you're in the mood for to take in a little art, just go down to the Goblin Art Gallery, a.k.a. the GAG, which which was a great gag. I slapped my knee at that one, Josh. I really enjoyed that.
If there's ever a return to Goblin, which all of a sudden I love that title, I picture Walter Camp's hair blowing and like he's holding onto like a palm tree. A return to Goblin. Anyway, I would definitely doing a story at the GAG.
Yes, excellent. Yes. Well, we'll get to Camp in a second. But what was it that inspired you to write these stories, Josh?
Okay, so at the time, I had gone like 10 years of what I would call failing at writing a novel. And all I mean by that is that I didn't finish one, right? And then I had a breakthrough with the first novel I finished. But I kind of recognized that that first novel really was a collection of short stories because it's two guys investigating this house in their hometown and they ask a million people about it and they each give their story about the house. So in a sense, I was like, yeah, you wrote a novel, but you also this is kind of a collection of short stories. But I also saw with that a path to finishing books. Oh, and so Goblin was next. I was like, I'm going to do that again, but in a bigger way. And instead of investigating, you know, this house, it's all that takes place in this one like town or whatever, blah, blah, blah. So it's almost embarrassing to admit this now, but originally it was called Rolling Hills. And I'm like working on like just in the, you know, beginning, the wraparound, the delivery driver and the beginning of A Man in Slices. And I'm calling it Rolling Hills, Rolling Hills Games, Rolling Hills Cemetery. I'm just like, hold on, dude. This isn't even a suburb. This is a subdivision. You know what I mean? Like, this is like two streets of nice bushes or something. No, we need a better name. And I was talking to a girl at the time, and I don't know how it naturally came up in conversation, but the word goblin did come up in conversation. She just said it for some reason. And I was like, that's it. That's the name of the city.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, what? What are you like, you know? And I'm like, no. It's so much better than Rolling Hills. That's it. And she, you know, it was funny because she's like, you can't name a city Goblin. I'm like, no, I'm done. That's it.
Yeah.
And it was almost like the minute because I already had a sense of the city itself and some of its quirks. But the minute it was named, I realized that I had my main character. I was like, this is it. Goblin is my character. And it was so liberating because what that told me was any story could happen inside of Goblin and the main character is present. Anything. Mm. It could be a funny story. It could be like over the top, like Neil Nash. It could be tragic, like Dirk. Whatever it is, there will be a running tone and mood through it, which is the city itself. And so it sounds almost superficial or something to say that once I had the name, I got the city, but that is what happened.
I totally got that. I was just so taken by that town. Everything, it was so atmospheric, the vivid descriptions, the topiaries, the rain, the weird cops. that are there.
Those cops.
You like draw any, as I'm an interior designer. So of course my mind naturally goes to like space planning. Did you draw any layouts of the town? Did you get into like other stuff? Cause I feel like it would have been fun to do.
Yeah. At some point I had to, I was like, okay, you know, Christmas, North, South, like Neptune streets. I'm like, wait, I actually need to know where I am. Cause at first you're just kind of like, they're driving down Neptune, you know? And then you're like, wait a minute. Now, later on, I want them near Camp's apartment. So where, okay, shit. I need to know where Neptune is. I need to know where Goblin Games is. I need to know where the gag is.
Where the gag started to
unfold from there. Mm-hmm. And then I had originally a list of 10 novellas to write that included the West Fields, the Woodruff. Uh-huh. It was called Room One at the Woodruff originally, and I had a whole plan that was actually going to be the next one to write. And I got to novella five. I got through five of them, and the rough draft at that point was over 500 pages. And I was like, dude, I don't think I'm going like five more pages, you know? So a year later, I was like, okay, is that done? That book, you know, I wrote. And then I was like, no, I just think it needs one more. So I added the, a mix-up at the zoo. I felt like the one, if there was something missing, I felt like it was missing a character that was sort of unphilosophical about Goblin, who wasn't maybe smart enough to examine it like Walter Camp, like Wayne Sherman, a character that was just almost tragically just swept up in Goblin. Right. And so Dirk sort of, you know, this lumbering, friendly enough tour guide who really just wanted like a nice night out, man. He really just wanted like a lady friend and a nice night out. And like,
really wanted a lady. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was just like swallowed up in whatever that goblin thing is. He's the biggest casualty to me in the book.
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah. I like that story. I'm glad you added it in there. Yeah.
Hey, thanks. And then, with that, I was like, okay, now we're done. Now let's do that. Six of them. There's like weight here. We got a range. We're done. But you know, those other four, five, six on that list. Yeah. Return to Goblin.
Return to Goblin.
Return to Witch Mountain. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
I kind of identified, this is sad, I guess, about me. I identify fairly strongly with Camp, the story about a guy who rips out all of his walls and everything. I'm surprised he didn't have his bed on the floor, because I could have told him that is something you need to do if you're scared, because that's a prime spot for monsters. But he hadn't gotten there, I don't think. But as a kid, like, I would have put some really serious thought behind that, doing something like that. Was this a fun one to write? Because it was really fun to read. And it was, I was like, oh, I got a little Walter Camp in me.
Yeah, he's long been one of my favorite, I don't know if this sounds weird for an author to say, but one of my favorite characters of mine. I think that Camp is like the ultimate gobliner, meaning with all the quirks and all the, he's haunted, but he doesn't even know exactly what he's haunted by. He's just haunted by it.
Yeah.
He's scared of being scared to death. He's not scared of the ghost. He's scared of being scared to death.
Yeah, exactly.
And at the same time, though, he's the most whip smart, like historical knowledge, knows the most about Goblin than anybody in town. So it's almost like there's almost like a Stockholm syndrome with him, that he's enamored by his captor. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that I wrote him before I wrote Neil Nash. I wrote him in order almost, except for that Dirk story. But I look at it now and I see that Walter and Neil Nash are probably the two most goblin-esque, because everything they do is reacting to Goblin.
Right.
Meaning, whereas Walter's kind of like a shell of a man and horrified, but super knowledgeable.
Yeah.
Neil is like this brash, gregarious, I'm going to break the one rule, and not very knowledgeable, or at least like pigheaded. But everything they both do is in reaction to the city. So in that way, they're on the same coin to me. Neither of these guys are free of Goblin, in other words. And so that's why, not to move too far ahead, I just wanted to say real fast, that's why following Neil's story, I wanted a kid, Pete, who wasn't ruined by the city yet, who, or not ruined, if that's the wrong word, wasn't bound or tied to it, whatever it is, but to the city yet, like these guys were. And so I tried consciously throughout to do that kind of balance. But Walter, I mean, I relate to him, man. I relate to...
Oh, I was going to ask you that. How much of you is in old Walter there?
Yeah, I scare easy. That's for sure. You can ask Allison. We'll watch a scary movie, and without fail, at like 4 a.m., I'll be like, hey, I got to use the bathroom. Will you want to come with me?
Totally.
And I'm like, or at least just talk while I go. I don't want the silent, dark house. How about that?
Yeah.
And so I get that about him, but I love that. And just like Walter, I'm very easily, if I'm freaked out, all it takes is like kind of pat me on the head. Or a little compliment, I'm a Leo, like a classic Leo. And all it takes is one like pat and you're like, oh, everything's great. And so for Walter, it was Mrs. Doris. Like, well, yeah. Why don't you come on in and talk about history for a minute? And he's okay. Maybe it is a good night after all, you know? And I definitely relate to that quick shifting of like, everything's fine. And then gradually like, no, it's not fine again, you know?
Yeah.
That's funny. Have you ever had a ghostly encounter on your way to the bathroom at 3 o'clock in the morning?
No, but my older brother has a story like that where he was going, there's between his bedroom and his three daughters' bedroom. There was a bathroom door he passed on the way, and he said he saw an old woman standing in the bathroom. And he says it was our grandma, but I'm like, I think, Derek, just so you know, it might have tricked your mind into thinking, your mind might have tricked itself into thinking, oh, it's just grandma.
You're like, grandma's still alive. What are you talking about?
That's actually a great short story idea. You start with what we're talking about right now.
Right.
That like the mind tricks itself to seeing something familiar.
Yep.
So then a guy, when later in the story he sees his grandma, we wonder what he's really seeing.
Oh.
That's a good idea. Okay. I'll use that somewhere.
There you go. The revenge of Goblin. Maybe that could go on that one. Revenge.
Walter with like war paint.
So I have a question too. So I don't know. I don't think it was addressed. Maybe I missed it. The citizens of Goblin are buried standing up.
Yeah.
Why? When? Where did that come from, I guess? Or did you have an idea of behind like why that would have started the tradition? I need to ask Walter this, I think.
Maybe. Yeah, no, I here, hold on. Let me get him on the...
No.
There you go.
I think the original idea came from just my own thinking, like why? Like, I understand it's repose and everything, but like, it's also like you could get vulnerable position laying down, like why don't we stand up, why don't you know, whatever, that's crossed my mind before also in terms of saving space, and like, I mean, what a creepy idea though, like if we're all like buried really close together standing up, I mean almost shoulder to shoulder, I mean that's a creepy, that is like a creepy thing. But then I heard after a friend read Goblin, they told me that like there's areas in Israel that actually do that.
Oh, for space reasons, probably.
Yeah, and I was like, really? I was like, I thought like I made up the weirdest thing ever. And they're like, no, there are places that for this very reason.
Oh, wow.
But in Goblin, I think the reason is to, I don't think it's explained in there. But I think the reason I would give it is some sense of like, so that the dead don't feel like they're useless. So that the dead don't feel like they have no purpose. So they feel like they're still actively involved. So they feel like they're still
supporting
moving forward.
And there is a great scene. I don't want to, no spoilers, but there is just an awesome scene. It's very cinematic what that happens with these residents underground later on in the book that I just.
Oh, with Roman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a great story also with Roman, the magician whose magic was a little too real.
I was so uneasy. I felt so uneasy reading that one. It made me so anxious. I felt like I was in the, theater watching, and I was very uneasy.
Are you into magic? Are you a Penn and Teller guy? What do you got?
I like all that stuff, and I have a great friend who's he's brilliant at this stuff, and like every party we're at, I'm like, you know, we'll be wasted, and I'll be like, James, do you have your deck of cards? He's like, of course I do. I'm like, oh, good. And then like it becomes like the James show. He carries it everywhere. I've never one time asked him. Like, we could be at a baseball game. It doesn't matter where it is. And it'll be like, yeah, of course I do. I bring it everywhere. So, all right, cool. But yeah, I'm into that. But I'm also into, horror theater. like Grand Guignol, like black box theater, like there's no decorations, no Sistine Chapel ceiling, just a box and something freaky happening on stage. And I feel like Roman and Maggie are a hint. I would like to write a whole book of stuff like that, but they're a hint of that for me. And like, what it can, man, can you imagine like being that close up when he throws an axe at her head and like these things? And yeah,
it was, I had to read that and I read it on the Kindle and I had to do one of those, you know, where you're like, oh no, what's going to happen? I'm going to look. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really exciting. A lot of the stories made me uneasy that way, where it was unsettled because Goblin's not an easy town. It's not, you know, it's a little, it's got that horror supernatural aspect to it. So you're not sure what's going to happen in this town. Yeah.
Presto was a bit reverse engineered because I loved the idea of what if the magic's real with a magician and they're saying, who wants to disappear?
Yeah great.
I don't want to give anything away here, but that was a bit reverse engineered because that idea to me was like, oh no. But then in a city like Goblin, it's like, it's almost like accepted that these bizarre things happen. And that's some of that Stockholm syndrome. It's like, but I can't really imagine any Gobliner, including Wayne Sherman, who maybe should have got the hell out of town earlier.
He really
might have done him well. Yeah. Like, go to the bar, dude. Like, go get a drink or a beer or somewhere. but I can't imagine him actually living somewhere else. Like, there's something like, I don't want to quite say it's like when somebody is, when one of us is comfortable in their own pity or comfortable in their own anxiety or that kind of thing. Like, I've been with anxiety for so long. If I didn't have it, I would be anxious that it's gone, right? And that's, there's a sense of that to Gobliners.
Yeah.
You know, but also Goblin doesn't only give them haunting, eerie, dark shit. It also gives them mystery, like a sense that there's more to this life than this life. And like, I mean, like it gives, it's, I don't want to quite say it's like living in the Twilight Zone, but it is a place that suggests there's more than just what's happening in front of us. And that's a lot. That's a lot to give someone too.
Yeah, there's the intrigue there. There's mystique. There's mystery, and I think you can see that also in the kid as he's going. He's getting ready. He's reading all about the magician and getting excited to go there. So you can see it on their faces. And but speaking of Wayne, I love the topiaries. You know, he's our topiary expert. Was that a little homage? I feel like maybe a possible homage to, you know, Stephen King and The Shining from the topiaries there.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be, whether consciously or not. That's true. The Shining is one of the first scary movies I ever saw. And I saw it alone. it was on like a video on TV, and that, wow. I read the book after I saw the movie. I think maybe that's the case for a lot of people, actually, just because you can see that movie when you're like 8 or 10.
Yeah.
And I discovered that topiaries were animals in the book and how they're getting closer to Danny on the swing set and all that. And so it had to be. It wasn't conscious. I don't know if authors do this, and maybe they do, where you're like, oh, I want to actually give a direct wink to Mr. King. Like, no. but is it influencing? Yeah, of course it's in there. Yeah. But I wanted Wayne's to be less decorative and more just infinite, like psychological, like typhoon. You know, I wanted like football fields long, like 3, 4. I don't know. I mean, what does it say? 6 football fields in there? I don't even remember.
Something like that. Yeah.
Something just absolutely impossible. Number one, impossible to maintain, which implies that there will be wilderness sections in there that you probably can't even enter. Mm-hmm. And I wanted it to be more like a state of mind, his state of mind, than a thrill, an attraction, which it becomes. But see, that's interesting too. Like, what, only in Goblin, right? Where if your mental breakdown becomes the biggest tourist attraction,
exactly. Yeah,
we should all be so lucky.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. And we can all capitalize on this.
That'd be great.
If only. Hey, are you still active with your, I was listening to Quiet Riots this morning, jamming out to it. Yeah, you still active? You get, you pick up the axe, you get at it?
Oh, yeah. So my bandmates and I, we've been best friends since we were like 11 years old. So,
oh man.
I mean, we're all in our 40s now, obviously. So it's like, why would we break up? Like, we're still best friends. Like, why would, like, can you imagine being like, guys, I think we should quit the band. Anyway, you guys want to all hang out tonight and tomorrow and the next day and the next day? And the next day? Like, what are we breaking up for?
No choice. Yeah.
So that has led to even, you know, they have kids and I have the book thing going in terms of time commitment stuff, right? But it's led to, like, when we have time, we did Quiet Riots, and we're working on a new one now and stuff. So I'm really glad that we never foolishly shut that door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it would have been so dumb.
That's awesome. What gives you more thrill, excitement, like a good day's worth of writing or cranking out a song?
That is a hard one, isn't it, man? Because once you're with the boys, you're playing with the dudes and you're like,
energy.
Man, you're just like, oh my God, were we on today? And the other one, though, I don't know if you can top, like, you're alone and you did a scene that you're like, ooh, that's right. Like, it's hard to top that. I think that the biggest link, though, that I see between them is that with an album, I care more about, like, anybody's album, I care more about, like, the spirit of it, the feel of it, the energy of it. And I don't mean necessarily punk. It could be Pink Floyd. It doesn't have to be, like, crazy fast. But I care more about that than I do a perfect guitar sound, a perfect singing voice, this kind of thing. And that same, I wouldn't say do-it-yourself aesthetic, but that same aesthetic is what I look for in a book. I'm more interested in the mood, the feeling, the what's presented, like the idea, rather than is every sentence beautiful? Is this quotable? Is this, like, you know, is there a great character arc? Is there a great plotting arc? I can recognize all that stuff in like classics and modern books, but to me it's like the spirit of a thing that matters most, and I feel like I absolutely got that from the music side.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe because you're maybe too critical of the writing side. Maybe, I don't know.
Or it would, like, open that door or something, right? Like, to be like, could every single line in Goblin and Bird Box, and can they be better? Of course, you know, of course they could. But is the sense of what's happening? Is right. Mallory's crazy problem in Bird Box, is it here? Okay, one time, so I live in the Detroit area, and I went to the Motown Museum once, and the guide was telling us this story about Berry Gordy, that when they were, like, mixing a song, mm-hmm. Berry Gordy would tell them, like, hey, the janitors are tapping their toes, like, we're done. Meaning the drums could be quiet, more louder, blah, blah, blah. But hey, they're dancing. We're done.
Yeah.
And that's what I look for. So I'll be, like, working on the book. I'm like, oh boy, this is rewrite number 5. This is it. And then finally I'm like, wait a minute. The janitors are tapping their toes. We're done.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah, can Mallory's arc be better? Yes, of course. Yeah. There could be better character development. Let's roll. We're done.
That's awesome. Good enough. It's good enough.
Yeah.
I also, since you mentioned Bird Box, I feel a sense of pride that Dave and I both read it before I'd heard of Netflix making it.
That's right.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Congratulations to you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was curious because, you know, authors get optioned and things don't happen a lot of times for a lot of authors. Did you, like, where were you and when did you realize, like, oh, this is huge?
So there are two moments. One, so originally Universal optioned it before the book came out. I mean, there's a whole wonderful story about my manager for that, but we'll just start there because it's like a 20-minute story. And so then Universal options it, and then time passes, but the producers they flew me out there to meet them. We talk on the phone to prospective screenwriters, but this would be happening every, like, couple months. So there's a sense, like, hey, it's still happening, I guess. Okay, it's still happening. And then I was in Michigan's West Side when I got a call that Sandra Bullock was going to play Mallory. Oh, Netflix bought it from Universal first. And then I got this call. And at that moment, we were like, oh, shit, this is real. And it was like, you know, I had my own idea of Mallory, obviously.
Yeah.
And when I got that call, it took maybe 2 seconds for me to now see her as Sandra Bullock. I was like, great, done.
She's the best, man. How can you not? Exactly. Great. Oh, my God.
It was, she's like our generation's like Audrey Hepburn or something. You know? Mm-hmm. And it was like, for me, yeah, that was the moment where we were all like, holy cow, dude. And the second moment of like, wait a minute, what's going on, was we threw a party here in Detroit the night it aired on Netflix. So, and it was in like this old like Ford showroom thing. So it would be like executives would maybe show a new car or something on this concrete and with a screen. And there's like 70 sort of, I guess you could say theater seats, but it's all corporate rooms sort of. But whatever, this guy uses it to like screen movies now. Great. So we were there and we showed it. And Allison and I, we were like, that's it. I mean, you can't get better than this. All of our friends in a room, it's on Netflix, like the moments here. And that was it. We left town and went way up north to where she's from, and got there late night, woke up at like noon the next day, and it was just madness, like already, like just endless notifications, mentions, this, the numbers from Netflix coming in and all this, and we were like out of town, like, wait, what's going on? This is, what is going on? And it just kept building for like 11 days or whatever it was, 2 weeks. And then on the drive home, back home after being up there, my agent called to say that the book had become a bestseller because of the movie.
Yeah.
But it was like that whole arc when we were up north was like, what the hell just happened? Yeah.
That's awesome.
I can't even imagine.
And I love Mallory. I listened to it on audiobook. What made you want to go back and revisit the character?
So, okay. Well, I guess three things, but I'll try to keep it short, is that number one, the rough draft of Bird Box had like a thread that I had removed, right? Mm-hmm. And I removed it because kind of what we were talking about before, I just wanted Bird Box to sort of have one note to it, mm-hmm. just dun, 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 right. dun, the river, we got to get to here.
Yeah.
And this other thread, it worked and fit, but it added a whole other like thing I had to resolve and whatever. I think I felt it took the attention away from that journey down the river. So that was number one, is that I'd always had this other thread that I was like, are we going to ever do that? Are we going to ever make that like book two or, you know, somehow? And then the second thing was seeing Sandra Bullock as Mallory, like seeing her and then seeing this and like, holy shit. Like, yeah, I, you know, and the third one, I mean, I feel like I'd be lying if I said didn't say that the success of the movie.
Yeah.
And so like those three things together were like, okay, you got the idea. You have like the one of the greatest actresses of all time played Mallory, and there is actually demand for this book now. Yeah, let's just do it right now.
You got to strike while the iron's hot. Yeah.
It's so gratifying. It's so annoying when authors don't give you that, you know, because we're all out there just like, please, please, please.
Give us more. Give us more.
There's nothing given, you know.
Return the goblin.
It's really gratifying as a reader to get it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think I would even do like more, but then, you know, there's so many freaking ideas. Like, I want to do a Return to Goblin, right? For crying out loud.
Exactly.
There are so many ideas, I don't know.
Yeah, I like that weird Western, the Unburied Carol, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you gotta, I like those Western type of things. Those are fun.
Yeah, me too.
Yep, and we also love Creepy Towns, and we loved your book, yes. Goblin, Josh, and... thanks so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun. Appreciate it. And good luck. Write that speech. Yes. For God's sakes, write the speech.
Oh, my God. But through the course of this conversation, I had already forgot. Thank you for...
Scatterbrain. Come on now. Let's focus. All right? Let's dig in deep. Amakatsu, she's already said she'll write it for you. So I just got a text. So.
Awesome.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thank you. That was amazing. By the way, great to hang out.
Oh, thanks, Josh. Thanks, appreciate it.
Right. Appreciate it. All right, thanks awesome. For
the books.
Bye-bye. Bye.
The Inside Flap.
There he is, a force of nature, Josh Mallerman. Great to talk to. Really enjoyed that conversation. Laura and I didn't have to do much of anything. He would
no, he was great.
Was off and running and really good guy to talk to. All right. That
Andrew's doing something really weird right now.
And well, the gain on his mic is up so high that you can hear him.
He just made a paper mustache for himself.
Ripped up the paper off his notebook. And there it is. There's Anthony. Yep. Yeah. There you go.
He's got a paper mustache.
He's got a paper mustache. All right. And with that being said, the paper porn mustache. Let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
And let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Laura, what do you have for us this week?
For, oh yeah, I need
you
that.
You want to borrow them?
Here. I don't know. I think you might have shoved it up your nostril.
I mean, he was way
here,
up there.
Here's the thing, Andrew. Were you? Did you mean to doodle a mustache, or did you just look down and see that it looked like one?
No, I doodled it to kind of make fun of the whole mustache thing. So
it's really funny.
I grew a mustache during COVID. Well, actually, I grew a beard.
I remember that beard. And then you shaved it.
I shaved it, and I kept the mustache for 2 days.
Oh, I forgot about that.
But I did it as...
Oh, remember that, Dave?
But
so
I did it as a joke, but
right.
Everybody in the family got a laugh out of it.
Oh, it was a good laugh.
But it was, without a doubt, is, Dad, you need to shave that off.
I found a picture on Facebook of Andrew's brother, Anthony, with the stash.
Yeah. Yeah. His poor wife.
You know, they belong in the 70s.
They do.
They should stay there. They should outlaw them.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. All these baseball players have them. It's like the big thing with the baseball players, I feel.
Well,
like.
You know, if you're a major league baseball player, you can wear whatever you want on your face.
I guess so. I don't know.
All right, let's get to it. Laura, what do you got for us?
I have a book called No Stone Unturned by Pam Lecky.
Oh, well.
I'm lucky to meet you.
Lecky, Lecky. Lecky, Lecky, Lecky.
I'm on another kick.
Sure you are.
Mm-hmm. This is another British cozy mystery set in Victorian England.
Oh my. How many of these books can there be?
There can't be enough for me.
Okay,
evidently, yeah. Dave.
Right. I need a sound effect for that.
Yeah, you kind of do. It's maybe the light of a gaslight light, clip-clopping of a carriage horse, something like that. So this one has a little bit of a feminist vibe that I enjoyed, and it stars a newly widowed woman named Lucy. Lucy is told that not only has her husband died a terribly violent death, but he's also been running a secret scheme involving sapphires from India.
A sapphire scheme, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
That may have been stolen from some very dangerous individuals, think Uncle Joey, who want to know where he hit him.
Ooh.
And they think she knows where he hit him. So there's also a handsome and charming insurance investigator named Phineas.
Is he slimy as well?
No, handsome? No. Handsome and charming.
Wow.
Charming and handsome in all the good ways.
An insurance guy?
Mm-hmm. He's trying to recover these gems, and he's also trying to confirm that Lucy wasn't in cahoots with her husband. This book does a really good job of showing how little control an unmarried Victorian woman had over her life. If you weren't married, you had very few choices. There are multiple female characters in this book that are living lives that are shaped and extremely limited by this time that they're living in.
Yeah, we talked a lot about that with...
we did, with another author.
Yeah, with...
Yeah, which I think she started me out on the Victorian England kick because it was about Jack the Ripper.
Oh,
it was so
that's right.
Good.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I kind of got entranced by that time period.
Yes.
I'm going to blame her.
Yes, that was Claire Whitfield.
Thank you. I'm blaming Claire Whitfield.
People of Abandoned Characters. She did get you on that kick.
She did.
It goes right back to episode 122. Another reason to go back to episode 122.
Good point.
There
Good
you go.
Point.
It always comes back to room 122.
This is a lighter book than Claire Whitfield's book, but it still shows these are men who are, quote unquote, controlling them. It's their father. It's their brother, uncles. It's whoever... holds the purse strings, who inherits the land, the firstborn nephew that gets it. It's not the oldest daughter who gets the land or the money or the title or whatever it is.
Right.
It almost, in this book, seems like the maids had more fun back then.
Wow, really?
I know it's probably not the case, but these maids are reading, in the book it's remarked upon because they're reading like dime store detective novels and kind of cheap thriller novels that the upper class women wouldn't necessarily read.
Oh.
But Lucy admits to reading it when her maid kind of leaves it around for her to read. And she's not supposed to like it, but she really enjoys them. They're really good. So, and then the maid plays a significant character in this one. And I liked her a lot. But Lucy's not sure who she can trust. And she needs to find the sapphires before anyone else does.
Yes.
So there are very exciting chase scenes in this book. There's women figuring things out on their own. There's a little bit of humor. There's historic detail. It's a delightful book. And it's the first in a series. It's the Lucy Lawrence series.
Ah, Lucy Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. And I love female amateur detectives.
Yep.
This is one to enjoy. And it's on Kindle Unlimited.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought for sure you're going to say that I love Lucy.
I do love Lucy. Yeah. Darn it. Darn it.
And you said you didn't need any sound effects this week. That would have been a good one. All right. Well, that's recommended by
Laura Medicus.
My book this week.
Dave Medicus.
In the spirit of Goblin, a book which is a collection of spooky stories, I give you The Dangers of Smoking in Bed. Stories by Mariana Enriquez, translated by Megan McDowell. So just like Goblin, we have a spooky place, an environment. These are also stories about the macabre, the otherworldly, except these are a bit more bloody, a bit more over. Let's just say these are not your grandmother's stories. All right. These are not as the kids say, NSFW.
Oh, okay.
These are not safe for work. And in this case, the place is Argentina, as the author is Argentinian. The stories are definitely not for the faint of heart. Some of my favorites in this collection included the story in which the main character is followed around by a ghost baby, even though that one was just a little bit humorous. And if you can imagine
it's a
having
little disturbing.
This. It's disturbing, but the way it was written. And that's the thing about these stories. You think they're coming at you from one direction and then something hits you. When you're looking to your right for the right cross, boom, you get the old left jab right to the face. I also really enjoyed the story, The Cart, in which an entire neighborhood is seemingly cursed by a fox. Which is funny, it's right next to my geese button. So I was playing that, and then I was like, well, let me hear the... I mean, you know... Sounds like a...
Similar registers, squeakiness.
Yeah, a goose on steroids.
Yeah. I was hoping to get that final squeak that fox does. It's okay.
We'll come back to that. Give everybody something to listen to. In the story of The Cart, this entire neighborhood becomes cursed after they kind of chase away this old homeless guy who's pushing around a cart, and then suddenly everything goes wrong for everybody living in this kind of working class neighborhood. I also will never forget the story Meat, the name of M-E-A-T, Meat, in which two girls are obsessed with a rock star who has committed suicide. The clue to what this story is about is related to the title Meat.
Ooh.
Okay. Another one. Yes, Andrew?
So we used to have a dog as a kid.
Oh, yes.
And we called him Meatball.
Uh-huh.
And then he had a little procedure, and so we just called him Meat after that.
Another one that stayed with me was one called No Birthdays or Baptisms. And on this one, this guy who makes movies or films, he is asked by this mother to record her daughter sleeping because the girl claims that she's being visited at night by an evil spirit that is doing disturbing things to her at night. The mother says this can't possibly be the case, so she wants him to come record her to prove to her there's nothing happening to her at night. These stories are dark, they are twisted, they are, see, Charlie's getting all worked up.
Well, they're stomping upstairs.
Speaking of disturbing, and they are warped. They will invade your subconscious and your brain and just kind of force you to glance askance at the world around you and see it in a different light. These are beautifully written, poetic almost, just a language that slams against the violence and the anger that is contained in these stories. I really enjoyed them. They make a nice companion piece to Josh Mellerman's Goblin. This is The Dangers of Smoking in Bed. Stories by Mariana Enriquez, translated by Megan McDowell.
Andrew Dowd.
What do you got for us?
So last week I reviewed a book. Mm-hmm. It was the Beginning After the End series. The book was The Early Years.
Yes.
And the author is...
Turtle Me.
Yep, Turtle Me.
Turtle Me.
And so if you remember, that book was a man being reincarnated as a baby.
I mean,
that's right.
He remembers he had to go through being born.
Yeah.
Having the umbilical cord cut.
Yeah. But still having a grown up mind.
You know, so sort of a reincarnation story.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is also a reincarnation story. And you know that because the title of the book is Reincarnation.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Right. And so this book is part of the threads of blah, 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 blah. This book is part of the Threads of Fate series. There are at least three books in the series, I think three books so far. And this first book is called Reincarnation. The author is Michael Head. This book is 357 pages and was first published in February of 2017. And so this book, the premise of this book is there's a man named Jim, and Jim is 600 years old. He is an accomplished magician, and he is getting ready to ascend to the emperor level as a magician, right? And so in this book, you basically keep working. And, you know, and if you get to a certain level, you can live to hundreds of years, maybe thousands of years. And as long as you keep growing as a magician, right, you keep living.
Hmm.
And so the emperor level is pretty much...
What happens if your magic stagnates and you die?
Then you die.
Wow.
Yep. And so...
You better... That's a lot of pressure to keep the old work ethic going.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And
interesting.
So, and a lot of people, they do stagnate. But not Jim. He's about to reach...
No, Jim's our guy. Jim's
the
a good
pinnacle.
Guy. I like this Jim character.
He's about to reach the pinnacle to become an emperor-level magician. Now, he basically is the right-hand man of the true emperor. And so the emperor basically says, oh, I've got these gadgets for you that are going to help you ascend to the next level. And so Jim takes them thinking, you know, he's known this guy for hundreds of years and he's assisted him for hundreds of years. And so he thinks he's his best friend. So, of course, he gets betrayed. And just as he's working into this, the emperor comes in and the emperor makes sure he knows. He's like, you know, those devices I gave you, they basically are going to kill you. You know, it's been nice knowing you. He's like, haven't you gotten a little suspicious that anytime somebody gets close to an emperor level, they don't live, they don't survive. He's like, you know, haven't you kind of figured that out?
Come on, Jim.
Because that's what the emperor is doing, is he basically knocks off anybody that could be a threat to him.
Mm.
And so, you know, and so Jim, it looks like things are over for him. But he does not take things easily. And so he basically ends up, he's got all this power. And this power ends up, I guess, reaching a next level. And he ends up reaching some sort of the power ends up transforming into chi. And he ends up basically blowing a hole in between worlds.
Whoa.
Right? And so he doesn't actually end up dying. He ends up destroying this city with millions of people in it as well. And he ends up blowing a hole in these worlds. And so he basically comes out of this and he thinks, you know, I must be in heaven or something like that. And I guess in a way he is, but he's not dead. Well, I guess maybe he is sort of dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so he comes into contact with two gods. And there's a male god and there's a female god. And so they're debating, well, what do we do with you? He's like, basically, you've blown a hole through these different worlds. And so now there's millions of these creatures called Nox, and the Nox are these evil parasites that basically have now invaded this world.
Tommyknockers.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tommyknocker-esque. And so, and they can basically like merge with other animals, they can merge with people. So if you have a dark soul, you will make a welcome host for the Nox, and you can transform into like some awful superhuman being. And so basically, he's like, you know, you've destroyed your world, you know, because millions of these things have been released. You didn't just destroy that town; you destroyed your entire world. And so, you know, it's like, well, what do we do? And so everybody else is looking. So what the gods do, never ones to waste a disaster, a tragedy. They decide to send Jim back into his body, with all his memories intact. And they don't send him back as an infant. They basically send him back to when he's 11 years old.
Oh.
And this is the day of testing. It's the day in which Jim discovered that he had magic, but he also discovered that, right, his magic, he was different, right? His town thought he was defective. And so he goes back 600 years to when he's 11 years old, back to this little village that he grew up in. And he actually has good memories of the village. He has good memories of his parents and things like that. And there he is back there in the day of testing. And so he comes to, it's a day of testing, you know, and he has some side effects from being reincarnated, but everybody thinks it has something to do with
nerves or something
with him touching the testing stone.
Oh,
but now when he touched the testing stone, there were, hundreds of black stars, and these were Nox. So the Nox also, because when they send him back, they also had opened the portal. Hmm. And so hundreds of Nox got through. And so the gods basically have told him, you know, you're going back, but you need to chase and hunt down all the Nox and kill them, right? That is your job. Your job is not to go and seek revenge for the guy who eventually is going to kill you, but you need to make, you need to destroy all these Nox, right? And so that's his, that's his mission. And so he really has become a tool and an instrument of the gods. Hmm. Now, there's a prophecy, of course, and the gods tell him part of the prophecy, but they don't tell him all of the prophecy. And, you know, maybe it's something along the lines of he is not only there to save the world, he's there to save, like, you know, all realities. There's a lot of humor in the book. What's nice about the book is the book is not, it has a really nice measured pace to it. Mm. It's not one of these books where it's, you know, it's danger times 110%, where it's like,
right.
You're going from the frying pan to the fire, and there's no chance for the characters of the story to develop.
To grow, yeah.
And so this book has a measured pace. There's character development. There's humor in here. There is really team building. There's relationship building. But then it also ratchets up, you know, often enough, you know, where there's action and there's violence, and, you know, you kind of get to see a Jim tested. And throughout all this, Jim and his team are basically being challenged. They're being tested. They come in contact with some absolutely horrendous monsters. And best of all, you get to see them dole out some justice.
Always good to see.
Yeah. And so the book is Reincarnation by Michael Head.
All right. Very good. And that is recommended by
Andrew Dowd.
Which means it is time now for the
Audiobook
of the Week. And my book this week is, listen, this is a really good one. I absolutely loved this book. I couldn't stop listening to it. I made up chores to do around the house so I could listen. The dogs got extra walks. It was one of those kind of books. It is called How...
Did not notice that. Just kidding.
It is called How Lucky by Will Leach, narrated by Graham Halstead. Now, what I love most about this book, and the reason that I think it works so well as an audiobook, is the unique voice of the main character of Daniel. And the book is written in first person, and he directly addresses us all throughout the book. So it's just perfect for an audiobook. And Daniel does have a unique voice, but if you heard his voice in real life, it would come out somewhat robotic and spoken with a gentle British accent, because Daniel needs a computer to speak for him as he suffers from spinal muscular atrophy, which, as he describes it, is essentially ALS for kids, as he was just a kid when he was diagnosed with this progressive disease. Although in this book, he has defied the doctor's dire predictions and has lived into his late 20s, which is how old he is in the book. But it's one of those deals where, you know, his mom takes him to the doctors, and the doctor's like, well, he's not going to live past next week or whatever. And the mom gets angry and storms out in a huff. And, of course, now here he is, you know, so many years later.
Lucky.
And there's your title, How Lucky.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But which is, and there's more than one reason
for
that.
A little ironic, probably,
that title.
Too.
Yeah, exactly. Now Daniel, and the disease has crippled him to the point where he really, and the way the author describes it, it's just absolutely amazing. This book, listen, if you want to really get into the head of someone with a degenerative disease like this, or someone who's in a wheelchair like this, this is just a great book to read, because the main character just has such a unique, he's a funny voice. He talks directly to us. I really loved the way the author structures this one. So Daniel, now he only really has control of his left hand, which he uses to type his speech into his computer or to operate his motorized wheelchair. And in spite of this, or perhaps because of it, Daniel is a very funny guy, and his observations about his disability are what I think a lot of people need to hear. He would rather, obviously, he says he would rather be hated than pitied, and wants people to know that there is nothing wrong with his brain. The disease only affects him physically, which is why he has a perfect job. He works online for an airline company and handles a lot of complaints. So when people call him names online, it doesn't bother him, because at least here in the virtual world, he's treated fairly and equitably. But he doesn't get angry at people. He doesn't get bitter. He's got this funny, sarcastic voice. He's grateful for the life he has. He's funny. He's a regular guy, despite the SMA. And now he literally, so there's a guy, he literally at night, people have to come in and check on him and turn him over while he's sleeping. He also has a full-time assistant and a woman named Marjani, and an old friend who gets high and takes him out for walks. And the relationships he has with these two, I just love. They've actually learned to have entire conversations with him just by the two of them looking at each other and being able to read their eyes. And I found the fact that he has these people in his life just heartwarming and comforting. And to this story, we add a little bit of a Rear Window-esque intrigue, as one day a student from the nearby university, and it's Georgia, this book is set in Athens, Georgia, well, a student goes missing, and which made big news, and Daniel believes that he saw her get into a strange man's car. And then the mystery becomes the story. And as gripping as I found this mystery, what really set this book apart for me was Daniel and his unique voice. I really enjoyed this one. Let's take a listen to a clip. This is How Lucky by Will Leach, performed by Graham Halstead.
My life is not a thriller. My life is the opposite of a thriller. What a relief. Who wants their life to be thrilling? Don't get me wrong. We want our lives to be exciting. We want them to inspire, to be surprising, to provide us a reason to get up and experience something new every day. But thrilling? No way, man. Everything that happens in a thriller would be completely fucking terrifying in real life. You've seen a million chase scenes in movies. So many that you barely even look up from folding laundry when one happens in whatever you're watching on Netflix at that particular moment. They're dull. They're rote and boring. But if you were in one of those chase scenes, it would be a nightmare. You'd be running for your life.
All right, there you go. That is your
audiobook
of the week, and that'll do it for us this week. Thanks again to Josh Mallerman for joining us. Check out his book, Goblin. It is a good one. My name is Dave Medicus, and we'll see you next week.
Adios.
So I'll leave you with an old joke.
Ah, yes.
Oh, boy.
Why do Italian men like mustaches?
Why?
I don't know. Why do Italian men like mustaches?
Because it reminds them of mom.
Well, of course it does.
Write your letters to Andrew Dowd.
Care of. Andrew Dowd.
He was touching himself under his pants.